The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review.
On today's episode, episode number 189, entitled How to Not Die, I chat with Dr. Michael Greger. Dr. Michael Greger is a physician, New York Times best-selling author, and an internationally recognized speaker. And in today's episode, Dr. Greger talks about the many aspects that go into living longer, becoming healthier, and not dying from a preventable disease or illness. He discusses the unparalleled importance of diet and exercise and gives us his best advice in each regard. Citing the best of the best in terms of research and scientific literature, Dr. Greger helps us weed through all the misinformation and shares only the facts about what can keep you young and well. If you're wondering how to not only not die, but to thrive and become healthier in all aspects of life, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. Okay, we've got an official launch date for the Elite Man Brotherhood. Mark your calendars now because in exactly 2 weeks from now, we'll be opening our doors up and letting you in. That's right, in just 2 weeks, on Tuesday, October 2nd, the Elite Man Brotherhood will go live. You can sign up by going to elitemanmagazine.com/brotherhood on that fateful day, or even better, pre-sign up now by going to that same link. Mark your calendars now and pre-register now to get a 14-day free trial of the group when we launch on that Tuesday. That's right, we're going to be diving right into Elite Man Brotherhood badassery on day one, and for our opening celebratory launch day special, I'm giving you the opportunity to try out the Elite Man Brotherhood for 14 days absolutely free. I honestly don't know how many of these free 14-day trials I'm going to be giving out between now and launch day, but if you want to ensure you get to lock in your first 14 days 100% free, go to elitemanmagazine.com/brotherhood and lock in your spot right now. Again, we're launching the best men's group in the world on Tuesday, October 2nd, and to ensure you get to try it out for 14 days absolutely free, go to elitemanmagazine.com/brotherhood or click the link in the show notes as always. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from elitemanmagazine.com, and my guest today is Dr. Michael Greger from nutritionfacts.org. Dr. Greger, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
So happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of your work. I read your book a long time ago, a couple of years back, and man, I'm just really excited to have you on. It's a true honor.
Great. I'm happy to help.
For those, I mentioned a minute ago in the intro, your backstory, kind of what you do, but just take 30 to 60 seconds and talk about how your approach is different as a physician than, say, most physicians out there in America who don't quite have the background that you have and the understanding of nutrition and its role in your health.
Yeah, well, my specialty is lifestyle medicine. So using lifestyle approaches like diet and exercise, not only to prevent disease, that's preventive medicine, but also to treat and potentially reverse it as well. About 80% of the disease that walks into a primary care doc's office are chronic diseases, lifestyle diseases. And so why not treat the cause with the diet and lifestyle changes instead of just, you know, covering up symptoms or slowing one's rate of decline with pills and procedures. So it's kind of a treat the cause approach as opposed to just plastering the Band-Aids on.
I love that. And I think if I'm correct here, you changed your philosophy on treating the cause as opposed to, like you said, putting on a Band-Aid after your grandmother got really sick, and I think she had end-stage heart disease. Is that right?
Yeah. I was just a kid when my grandma was diagnosed with end-stage heart disease, sent home in a wheelchair to die. She already had so many bypass surgeries, she basically run out of plumbing at some point, could find a wheelchair, crushing chest pain. Her life was over at age 65. But then she heard about this guy, Nathan Pritikin, one of our early lifestyle medicine pioneers. And what happened next is actually detailed in Pritikin's biography. It talks about Frances Greger, my grandmother. They wheeled her in, and she walked out. In fact, a few weeks later, she was walking 10 miles a day. She was given a medical death sentence at age 65, but thanks to a healthy diet, was able to enjoy another 31 years on this planet till age 96 to continue to enjoy her six grandkids, including me. So that's why I went into medicine. That's why I started NutritionFacts.org. That's the why I practice the type of medicine I do today, lifestyle medicine. That's why I wrote the book, How Not to Die. And that's why all the proceeds from all the sales of all my books all goes to charity. I just want to do for your family what Pritikin did for my family.
Love it. I love that story. What did her protocol look like in terms of foods throughout the day that she was eating and maybe some of the supplements or herbs and spices that she was taking in?
Yeah, actually, that was one of the things that the Pritikin diet got flack for. Not enough flavor, actually. Yeah, Pritikin was no chef. It was basically a low-fat plant-based diet. What one might call kind of a whole food plant-based diet at this point, which is kind of what inspired Ornish and Esselstyn to do very similar diets. Unfortunately, that was a time before we had quantitative angiography, basically before we had these heart scans where you can actually see how wide open the arteries are. And so we had these kind of, like my grandma, these miraculous people with, you know, crushing chest pain, couldn't even walk without great pain in their chest and legs, all of a sudden, you know, jumping out of the wheelchair and being able to resume their active lifestyles. Yeah, but that's kind of on self-report, subjective. I feel better, less pain. It's like, Pritikin was reversing heart disease by the thousands back in the 70s, but it wasn't until the 80s when Ornish arrived at the scene and could actually use the new technology to show the benefit based on kind of really the lowest technology possible intervention. We're not talking about bypass surgery here. We're just talking about maybe bypassing some of the crap people eat and eating the healthiest foods out there.
Okay, cool. So what actually, because your approach is similar in a lot of ways, it's very much low-fat, high plant-based foods. What is actually happening inside the body when you switch to that type of diet? What is going on in terms of the blood and the physiological processes that are happening, you know, genes turning on and bad genes turning off?
Sure. So, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call it a low-fat approach. It's a whole food approach. So it's low fat in that I don't encourage people to use oils. It just seems like a waste of calories. But whole food sources of fat, nuts, seeds, avocados, nut butter, seed butters, I'm all down for. In terms of what happens within your body, you know, people, you know, the first half, you know, as you read of my book, How Not to Die, 15 chapters, each of the 15 leading causes of death, talk about the role of diet may play in preventing, arresting, or reversing each of the 15 killers. And, you know, after, you know, chapter 5 or 6 or something, you're like, wait a second, like, this is starting to sound familiar. Wait a second. How can the heart healthy diet be the same diet that's the brain healthy diet and the liver healthy diet and the kidney healthy diet? I mean, it seems a little too kind of like, you know, snake oil salesman panacea kind of thing at a point. But then you take a step back and realize, well, wait a second. Of course, a diet that's healthy for the arteries, right? A diet that opens up the plaque, opens up the arteries without drugs, without surgery, dissolves that plaque away, clogging up our arteries. Well, yeah, of course. I mean, arteries go to every single organ in our body, right? So, of course, the same diet that prevents heart attacks is also going to prevent strokes, also going to improve kidney function, also going to improve erectile dysfunction. I mean, you know, we're talking about blood flow, period. Every organ needs blood to get oxygen, to get rid of waste products. So, you know, you're like, well, duh, of course, that would make sense. Same thing with inflammation, for example. So a plant-based diet is an anti-inflammatory diet, and inflammation appears to play this low-grade chronic state of inflammation appears to play a role in many of our chronic diseases like diabetes, heart disease, etc. So, duh, of course, an anti-inflammatory diet is going to affect so many different diseases. The microbiome, critically important. You know, we used to think that our good gut flora was just important in terms of intestinal health, you know, constipation, etc. But now we know, no, actually the guts, the bugs we have in our gut actually produce compounds that are absorbed back in our body, circulate throughout our systems, can impact, have an impact on our immune function, can have an impact even on our brain function. No wonder the diet containing the greatest amount of prebiotics, so that's what our good bacteria eat, fiber-resistant starch, found only concentrated in whole plant foods. Well, of course, the diet that best makes our good gut flora thrive, it makes a little more sense why the same diet would affect so many other things. You mentioned kind of epigenetics. That's this concept of genetics may load the gun, but it's environment that pulls the trigger. You can have identical twins, literally the exact same DNA. One gets a disease and the other one doesn't. And the reason is because there are environmental influences. Yes, you have the same genes being turned genes on and off based on what you're putting in your mouth, based on whether you're smoking, based on whether you're exercising. And so we can modify our risk. Now, some people are always going to start out at a higher risk. Some people are always going to start at a lower risk, but that's no excuse. If you have a bad family history of some disease, then you just have to work even harder. People just throw up their hands, but no, you have to even healthier than everybody else. You know, your friend with a great family history, you can get away with eating crap, right? But you really got to eat healthy, right? Because you're already starting out with the deck stacked against you.
In terms of the keto diet, high fat diet, high animal fat diet anyways, what are your thoughts on that? I kind of know what your thoughts are, but I want you to share them with the audience. And then also the research articles, because you're big on research on nutritionfacts.org and, of course, your books. There's so many citations. How do you weed out the good articles, the good research that's done from the bad ones? Because there's so many contradictory papers out there, and a lot, especially now, there's a big fad to say that high fat's great, high keto diets are good, high animal fat diets are good. How do you weed those out and stick to the good stuff that actually, you know, is really proven?
Yeah, so research is all I do. In fact, it's critically important that people not only share with you where they got the information, not just cite the information, but actually show you the information. Like, none of us were born with this information, right? So you shouldn't believe me. You shouldn't believe anyone. You should believe. I mean, when it comes to something as life or death important as what to feed yourself or your family, well, then you want to actually see the evidence with your own eyes, right? I mean, when it comes to, you know, buying a toaster on Amazon or something, yeah, what some opinion of some random stranger might actually influence you one way or another. But when it comes to something this important, then, when patients come to me, why do you eat this? Well, yeah, somebody at the gym said this was a good idea, or, you know, what they're reading in some, you know, checkout line magazine or something. It's like, if there's any decision to be made based on the best available balance of evidence, it should be our health. And so that's why nutritionfacts.org, if you look at, it's not my opinion, it's not my nutrition beliefs, right? It's just, here's the science, the peer-reviewed medical literature right in front of you. I actually show the science, the graphs, the original papers with links to all the original PDFs. You can read it yourself, make sure I didn't take anything out of context or anything. And so there certainly are sometimes contradictory claims. Most of the time, there simply isn't. I mean, there's just overwhelming research in one direction, and it doesn't even, evidence doesn't even exist. So, for example, there's only one diet ever proven to reverse heart disease in the majority of patients. That's a plant-based diet. I mean, if that was all a plant-based diet could do, reverse the number one killer of men and women, isn't that going to be the default diet to prove it otherwise? The fact that it can also be so useful in preventing, arresting, reversing other leading killers, type 2 diabetes, hypertension, seem to make the case for plant-based eating simply overwhelming. So, you know, anytime you hear about one of these diets, keto, anything else, say, wait a second, has this diet been proven to reverse heart disease, you know, number one reason me and all my loved ones will die? The answer is no. I'm like, what would you even consider, right? I mean, so that's not cherry picking. I mean, it's hard to cherry pick when there's only one cherry. No other diet has ever been shown that, right? Okay, so it's not a matter of, but what about the paper that showed? No, there is no other paper. There is no other diet ever been shown. Okay. Now, At the same time, there certainly are nutrition controversies with studies going one way or another. Important questions to ask is, you know, follow the money, right? Cui bono, who profits? And so, you know, if a study is funded by the Almond Board of California and says that almonds are great, not necessarily a bad study, but you want to give that study a little extra, you know, you want to eyeball that study a little better. Look at the method. See if they designed a study to get some kind of desired result, right? You see this clearly with drug trials, with studies of artificial sweeteners, studies soda, where studies that are funded by companies have what's called a funding effect, meaning that they're vastly more likely, sometimes 10, 20 times more likely to come out with a conclusion that's favorable to the funder compared to otherwise. And so, you know, again, it's no guarantee. Just because something's funded by the Ag Board doesn't mean that it's necessarily a bad study if it shows that eggs are good. But, you know, you just have to give it a little extra care. And then you look, you know, you look at systematic reviews, you look at meta-analyses, you look at the Cochrane groups. And these are some of the evidence-based models where that compile all the evidence together. So, like, you know, if there one study shows that coffee's good for you, one study shows it's bad, well, you look at all the studies. You put all the studies, so maybe there's 40 studies on coffee. You put them all together. You compile them. It's like as if it was kind of one big study, and there's statistical methods you can do to kind of compile the results. And then you see, oh, well, it turns out, yeah, I mean, it does, even though individual studies may have been a little, if you put it all together, it may clearly show one way or the other. And that's this concept of the balance of evidence, the best available balance of evidence. What does it show? That's what we want to know. So when the Coca-Cola funds a study saying that Diet Coke is the best thing on the planet, okay, but if you put all the Coke studies put together, both funded and unfunded, then you realize, oh, maybe Coke isn't the best thing to drink after all. And so that's what I attempt to do on nutritionfacts.org, just because not everyone has the time to be digging through and not just reading the original studies, but putting that study in context of all the other studies that have ever been published on that particular topic. But I got a whole research team that does it. And proud to get that information out there. Basically, it's the resource I wish I had when I was a medical student. I didn't really exist. And so that's what I've kind of dedicated my life to.
Yeah, like I said, it's really tough to weed out through some of the other stuff out there. But, I mean, like you said, there's nothing that really proves, as does a plant-based diet, that it can reverse heart disease, you know, for a fact. But there are other papers out there that suggest keto may be good in different situations or things like that. But those aren't necessarily double-blind, placebo-controlled.
The only real efficacy that's been shown for ketogenic diets is for certain cases of intractable pediatric epilepsy. So about 1 in 90,000 births, for example, is a congenital defect where you actually – the transport protein that takes blood sugar from your body into the brain is defective. You're just kind of born that way, and so you start having the infantile seizures, horrible disease. So that's where actually ketogenic diet is the first-line treatment. They don't even try drugs. They go straight to ketogenic diet, a way to get energy into the brain because they can't transport sugar sufficiently. You can have these kind of miraculous recoveries. Of course, they suffer all sorts of, you know, long-term effects of ketogenic diets, bone loss and growth stunting and kidney stones and nutrient deficiencies, all the things you associate with eating, you know, this horrible diet. But, oh my God, in that case, benefits far outweigh the risks, right? But, you know, people, you know, point to that kind of study and they say, see it, wow, it looks for this, it does this amazing thing for, and so somehow that's good for, like, normal people? Like, since when do medical interventions are like good for like healthy people? It's like, you know what else works for intractable epilepsy? Brain surgery, temporal lobe resection. They actually go and take a lobe of the brain out. Horrible potential side effects, but worth it, right? But who's signing up for, you know, to get their skull sawed open, right? Even if ketogenic diets worked for certain brain tumors, and we actually don't have good clinical data, but what if a study comes out saying, wow, ketogenic diet can starve certain brain tumors, actually improves outcomes. Even if that were the case, like, so does chemotherapy. Who's signing up for the chemo diet? Why not the chemo diet instead of the keto diet, right? No one's lining up because that doesn't make sense, right? I mean, anyway, I mean, just the whole thing, these ketogenic diets have been pushed I mean, it's treated as the new thing. It's literally 160 years old. Banting started in the 1800s, keeps coming back. Atkins, you know, pushed it in the 70s. I mean, it's just people love hearing good news about their bad habits. Anyone coming along saying, oh, it's eat bacon and butter, it's good for you, you know, it's going to sell a lot of books, but it's selling the public short.
Yeah, I fell for that. Not necessarily fell for the trap, but I wanted to try it out myself for a couple months and did it with an open mind. And I felt like it helped a little bit in terms of energy for like a month or so. And then it kind of died down and I started getting some gastrointestinal issues and problems like that. So backed off of it. But yeah, I'm back on the cleaner diet of plant-based. So what you mentioned a minute ago with in terms of the Coke studies that the back in the day or whatever, it reminded me of smoking companies also.
Oh, sure.
And the studies that they went out. So basically, like, we're kind of living in the same, we're repeating history, where we're living in the same type of atmosphere where these large companies can manipulate these studies and make certain foods appear healthier than they are, or certain bad foods not appear bad, even though they really are.
It's actually that's actually a good metaphor. So if you go back, 1950s or so, you know, the average per capita cigarette consumption, 4,000 cigarettes a day. The average person walking around smoked half pack a day. I mean, people forget this. And look, the government was telling people to smoke. The AMA, the American Medical Association, was telling people that smoking on balance is good for you, that smoking in moderation, that's fine, right? I mean, look, and so all of society, smoking was normal. Most doctors, the majority of doctors smoked, right? And so, of course, they're not going to tell their patients, right? Just like today, the majority of physicians are eating foods contributing to our epidemics of dietary disease. Of course, they're not going to tell people to put down the ham sandwich that they just ate for lunch. Like, the whole system is set up it's just normal to eat crap, just like it was normal to smoke. And so all the science was just ignored. Back then, in terms of lung cancer, we have studies dating back to the 30s showing links between lung cancer and smoking, completely ignored off the face of the earth because it's just what you did. And the same thing, decades of science going back showing, attributes of the healthiest diet, yet is being ignored because that's not where the money is. The money is things that are shelf stable, a Twinkie that'll last for weeks on the shelf. Produce goes bad. Right? I mean, fruits and vegetables, like, there's no markup. They're not even branded products. And even a broccoli grower isn't going to put an ad on TV for broccoli. You'll buy their competitor's broccoli. Like, it just doesn't make sense that the system is set up to reward junk, right? Look, what's Coca-Cola? How much how much did Coca-Cola cost to make? I mean, what's in it? Sugar that's subsidized by U.S. taxpayers, so it's artificially cheap sugar, right? What, a few pennies of sugar water, right? And they can sell for a few bucks a bottle. I mean, it's like all profit. It's not like the CEO of Coke is sitting around, how can I make kids fat? Even if they got a conscience, they'd be kicked out by the shareholders in a second if they started, you know, trying to sell something healthier. I mean, it's just the system set up for short-term profit. Short-term profit just happens to be really the worst possible stuff, and it's unfortunate. But that's why we have to take, you know, we have to just like the smokers in the 50s, if they had access to the science, they could have made up their own decision. Well, now we have the same thing, regardless of what the powers that be say. We can look to the science to guide us.
Hey, I've got some fantastic news to share with you today. We've just launched our Elite Man store, where you can finally get yourself the official Elite Man t-shirts, sweatshirts, long sleeve shirts, and even tank tops to look incredible and feel even more incredible when you step outside your home. That's right, after years of getting emails and messages about putting together some official Elite Man gear for all you elite men out there, I had to take some action and appease the masses of enthusiastic gentlemen. And boy, are you going to be happy. We've got some really slick looking, comfortable, and badass shirts, sweatshirts, and tanks right now, and I know you're going to absolutely love them. I've been wearing these shirts myself for the last few weeks and couldn't be more thrilled with how they've come out. So if you want to represent the Elite Man brand anywhere you go and look ridiculously cool in just about any setting, head on over to elitemanmagazine.com/store and order your favorite Elite Man shirt right now. Look incredible, feel incredible, and show the world exactly what an Elite Man embodies. Again, that's elitemanmagazine.com/store to order your favorite Elite Man gear. elitemanmagazine.com/store. What are your thoughts on EMFs and also sitting when they say that is like the new smoking? Do you buy into that? Do you
think that? Interesting. You mean like EMFs as an electromagnetic field?
Yes.
Well, did you see my video today?
I didn't see it. No, not yet.
Literally this morning's video was about electromagnetic sensitivity. Anyway, I've got a whole bunch of videos on cell phone radiation, Bluetooth radiation, talking about Wi-Fi in terms of sperm counts, in terms of brain function, in terms of hearing function, in terms of parotid gland cancer, brain tumors, you name it, it's all on the site. I did a deep dive into all aspects of that. You can check that out and see what the actual science says in terms of all the craziness on the internet. Sitting, new smoking, not even close. Smoking's way worse for you. Sitting is terrible. So people that sit on average 6 more hours a day significantly increase mortality, even if they're physically active. Even if after their desk job they go out and to the gym an hour a day, even if they're real exercise way more, they still have increased mortality compared to people that don't sit that long. So, and that's for a bunch of reasons. I have a bunch of videos on sitting. That's why I'm on a treadmill right now. Because it's just not good for you, but it's saying it's as bad as smoking is really an overstatement, and
okay, yeah, those two things kind of come to mind too when I think of smoking and people thinking at one point that smoking was good for you or not bad for you. Then you think of things like EMFs that are just coming out, and then of course sitting, which I don't really buy into as much, but yes, you're right, I think there is something to the fact that sitting around all day is not healthy, sedentary lives. But that does pop to mind, especially the EMF part. I think that is something to keep in mind, more aware of. But how much, I was going to bring that up, the treadmill that you're doing right now. How much exercise do you do a day? How much do you spend on that treadmill? How much time?
When I'm home, I average about 17 miles a day. It's really slow. It's about 2.5 miles an hour. So I'm really not even getting my heart rate up. So, I mean, it's not great exercise, but definitely... it just keeps the blood flow going, keeps the endothelium happy, the artery lining happy. Then of course, you know, when I'm traveling, I'm sitting on my butt on the plane, you know, all day and not getting anything. Anytime I'm reading, anything I can do, walk, you know, look, you're on the phone. I mean, you know, you're looking down at your phone, you realize, I was just on the phone for 45 minutes. You don't even realize how much time. Think if you were just walking around the block, right? Or taking the dog out, or even walking on a treadmill, anything, you kind of forget you're even doing it because you get lost in something else. And you realize, wow, you can dramatically increase your physical activity just, you know, by adding movement to your day in kind of sneaky ways.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So what do you recommend for exercise protocol for most people? How often should they be exercising?
Oh, yeah. So I recommend, meaning what the data shows, 90 minutes a day, 7 days a week of moderate exercise or 4 or 5 minutes of vigorous exercise. And the only reason it stops at 90 is just we have no data beyond that. And so the biggest data is actually walking. Data, so kind of brisk walking, 3-4 miles an hour, shows that, you know, even 15 minutes a day is better than nothing, but half an hour is better than 15, 45 is better, 60 is better than 45, and 90 is better than 60. And the only reason we don't have anything above that is because they couldn't find enough people that are regularly exercising more than 90 minutes a day. It's possible that, look, 120 is even better. I mean, we just don't know, or maybe it's worse, we don't know, right? So the best data we have now is 90 minutes a day. That seems to be in terms of the best longevity, in terms of the best outcomes. And so, frankly, that's what I think the exercise recommendation should be. They'd be like, here's the truth. Now, they don't want to say that because they need to, you know, soft pedal the message to make it achievable, to make it, you know, they don't want people to just kind of throw up their hands and forget about it. But I think it's patronizing. And you know, same thing they do with diet. You have to kind of soft pedal the message. We can't, talk about moderation, all this stuff. Well, tell me what the science is. And then, look, I can make up my own mind. Look, it's your body, your choice. You want to smoke cigarettes, do whatever you want. But you should know the truth. You should know the predictable consequences of your actions.
Mm-hmm. What are your favorite foods to eat throughout the day? We're going back to plant-based here, but what are some of the things that people can or should consume every day or throughout the week at least?
Yeah, in fact, I even made it into a free app, Dr. Greger's Daily Dozen, on iPhone and Android. So the first half of the book is the 15 chapters, 15 leading causes of death. But, you know, the second, I didn't want it to just be kind of a reference book. I wanted to be a practical guide. I'm making kind of, you know, day-to-day grocery store type decisions. So the second half of How Not to Die is centered around my recommendations for the Daily Dozen list of foods that encourage people to fit into their daily routine. So greens every day, the healthiest vegetables, berries every day, the healthiest fruits. Talk about legumes, cruciferous vegetables, a tablespoon of ground flax seeds, quarter teaspoon of turmeric every day, the best beverages, the best sweeteners, exercise component, all that. It's just in trying to inspire people to include some of the healthiest of healthy foods into their daily routine. And you can click off the boxes and graph your progress over time. Again, just kind of, have someone think, oh, wow, I haven't had any beans today. Quick, I've got to, crack open a can or something and throw them on whatever. So, those are really the healthiest. And then it's just a matter of finding ways to make them taste good, right? This is not about holding your nose and being like, well, I just got to eat some because it tastes good. No. I mean, yeah, you can do that for a little while. But no, it's like not what you eat next week or next year. It's like the next few decades. You got to find ways to include these foods in your diet that's convenient and cheap and delicious and, just fits into your lifestyle. And so, I think greens is the classic example. Like many people have this flashbacks of overcooked gray servings on their school cafeteria trays or something, just nasty. But don't realize, you can make greens taste delicious. Brussels sprouts. Have you tried roasted Brussels sprouts? Roasted cauliflower. I mean, there's ways to make vegetables actually taste good, like craveably taste good. And that's really, that's the only way you got to make it. Kind of in the long run in terms of sustainability. So I encourage people, now there's just like millions of cookbooks out there, ways, and you just experiment around however long it takes. I would encourage people to transition at whatever speed to healthier diet that makes it sustainable, right? Even if it's just like, all right, I got to find something healthy to eat for breakfast, right? Maybe I don't like oatmeal. That'd be a great choice. But so you keep trying different things. So you find, all right, I got something that I really like. I really enjoy. Look forward to the next day to eat it. And it's healthy, right? Okay, well, then let's find some things for lunch. Healthy soup, salad, sandwich, whatever. It's like, I don't like this, but I like this. I don't like this. You just got to keep experimenting around until you find something that, hey, wow, this has got the best of both worlds, right? Delicious, and you get to live longer. Like, that's what plant-based eating is all about.
And how often do you recommend people eat? Is it every couple hours, or is it just a couple big meals?
Oh, interesting. In my next book, which will be out December 2019, I'm doing a chapter on meal frequency. I have not gotten to that section yet. There's actually a really large literature on meal frequency, in terms of snacking, in terms of, I have all the literature. It's sitting in a folder. I haven't read it yet, but stay tuned.
Right now, too, there's two schools of thought with the intermittent fasting kind of approach and having the window, and then also the grazing approach, which is, every couple hours eating. So right. It's interesting to see what you come up with.
But, yeah.
Dr. Greger, it's been an awesome interview, man. I know your time's precious. Just kind of wrapping things up, what is the last takeaway send-off message you'd like to leave the Elite Man audience, and then also a place that our listeners can check out more about your awesome book and your work?
I think really the good news, I want to share the good news, that we have tremendous power over our health, destiny, and longevity. The vast majority of premature death and disability is preventable with a healthy enough plant-based diet. And lifestyle changes. So, it's just like we have the power. It's really an empowering message. And what I would say, particularly for your audience, there's an amazing documentary coming out in November called The Game Changers. Have you heard about it?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So it's basically talking about male athletes, fitness, sexual prowess all the way down, and it's all about the healthiest diet and stuff. I saw an early version, and it's just like will blow your freaking socks off.
Nice.
So it's just male focused in terms of optimal fitness, and I think you'll love it.
Cool. Definitely going to check that out. And then what's the website again for your
book? Nutritionfacts.org. All my work is free there. Check it out.
All right. Dr. Greger, thanks again for coming on, man. I really do appreciate it. Take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Keep up the good work.
Hey, one last little reminder before you go. Make sure you go to EliteManMagazine.com/brotherhood right now if you haven't already and pre-register for the Elite Man Brotherhood. You will get your first 14 days 100% free, and you get to try it out and see how incredible the group is on October 2nd when we launch. On day one, we will be starting the group and kicking ass right away. So make sure you're signed up, ready to go, and be prepared to take your life to the next level.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.